Today's, no, I don't say today's. This is no. Almost how I started the last time. Who's this for?
Tailwind.
Got it. The Tailwind to Nutrition Tip of the Trail comes today from Warren Pohl.
It does indeed. And my tip today is relevant to my recent trips through various airports. When you're going through security at the airport next, grab a load of those little plastic bags that they give you to put your liquids in, because they're a perfect size for putting stuff in into your pack. And the reason for this is when you are half crazed and out of your mind, trying to sift through the 20 things or the 15 things that are in your pack will drive you bananas, and you won't be able to find that glove or that neck warmer or that piece of food that you were looking for. Bag things separately. You know, one bag for your spare dry shirt, one bag for your waterproof jacket, one bag for your gloves and hat, one bag for your food. That way, you can find stuff in the middle of the night when you are half delirious.
So frugality is the tip of the trail today. And if you can't afford Ziploc bags at the grocery store, just go to the airport and take them from the security line.
What, you mean you can buy them here in America? This country is amazing.
You know, Warren, I thought you were going to say, take those bags, dump Tailwind Nutrition in there, and see how long you spend at the under the observation of the...
Put serving size in the in those little bags.
Well, they think you're trying to heist some drugs through the old line onto the plane.
Oh, geez.
That's where I was going, Scott. I thought, you know, you got a few hours to kill.
This is tail trip, not drug tip of the day.
This came to my mind.
I know. Weird things to come to his mind.
So tomorrow we're going on a trail run with Warren. He's going to be drinking some Tailwind Nutrition. We're going to give him some new mix, some new flavors, and we're going to get his input on just what he thinks his favorite flavor
so,
is.
So you have four choices now. Organic lemon, mandarin orange, and very berry. I don't know. It's not very berry, but berry's my favorite. Berry's my favorite. And then there's naked.
Naked. I generally like things naked. So,
okay. So we'll go naked tomorrow. So go out and run.
Naked.
Moss.
Today's Petzl running strategy is brought to us from across the pond, actually across the table, from Warren Pohl. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Scott.
What's your tip?
My tip? Okay, so if you were running through the night and you were wearing what you might term a headlamp and what we in England would call a head torch.
We call them torches now because of you.
Ah, you
Petzl torches.
It's carrying over. It's
yes.
Good to see. It's good to see. You're there with your head torch on and you're running away. Now, we all know the night is a difficult time and you're really shut down. And sometimes... consider turning that torch off.
Completely off.
Completely off. Now, clearly, don't do this on a breakneck downhill when you're the only person around and there's no moon and it's wet. But there may be times when you've just got it on out of habit and, you know, you're really in a zone there and you can forget about stuff. So what I find is that late night torch thing, you can get very sucked into that beam and you just see sort of dust and particles and rain and whatever lashing past it. And you sort of... that becomes your world, that and your feet, for upwards 6 to 8 hours. And it's not a mentally good place to be the entire time. So if you're finding yourself that, consider switching it off. Because often, there's enough light. It's not like we're charging through there at 100 mile an hour. We'd all love to be Kilian Jornet or Anton Kapitschka piling through it and needing, you know, that full daylight on our head. Because we're so fast and there's no one in front of us. But let's say, sometimes we're not. Turn it off. Appreciate the nighttime beauty. See what's around you. Give your body and your mind and your eyes, give them a rest. And I don't know about anyone else, I feel a bit queasy when I've been staring into a head torch beam for 8 hours plus. So just break it up a bit. Consider it.
It does give your eyes a bit of a rest too. Your eyes need a break from just constantly looking and straining in the same way. I'm not going to say I take it one step further. Maybe I'm a little bit lazier because I have stopped and paused and not run and just... you know, had whomever I'm with, let's turn off our lights and just look at the canyon or look at the stars and take a minute and appreciate that. That's a view that's well earned. Not everybody has that. You can search Google and find some images, but that's a unique moment to be able to just take that in, and we shouldn't bypass that. You only have so many of those.
And you were just talking to me the other day of one night you were out and it was a full moon and you were able to turn off your head torch. And it was a bright enough moon that you could actually run.
It, you know, in the fall, or when that moon is full and coming, just beating right across, it just, you could see a shadow on the bank to your left as the moon was to my right, that is as defined and as distinct as if you had something black and you were painting it. Just amazing.
So that's a great running strategy. Turn off the torch as a little bit of variety.
So go out and
look at Petzl.com. Look at their cool head torches. We're doing a little bit of anticipation. We have a new head torch that they have been kind of toying with us that hopefully in this next month we're going to be able to release and let you know a little bit about that. But in the meantime, go get yourself one of the Petzl head torches. The Now is the one that Don and I are loving right now. No pun intended. Go to Petzl.com, grab yourself a torch because it's worth the money.
And running at night is right.
It's the way it should be. It's a beautiful place to be. Enjoy it.
Go out and run.
In the light.
In the dark.
Mas.
Are we recording?
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it.
I'm stretching my groin.
Faith, give me a little 1-2. 1-2. 1-3-4-5-6. Check.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I am Scott War.
And she's Anna Frost, and she's on the end of a Skype line, and she is located in... Where are you located, Anna Frost?
Today I'm in Annecy. In France.
In France.
That's France.
Did you see the blank look on my face,
yes,
Scott? Like,
yeah.
Where in the world is that?
Yeah.
I need things like Paris. So...
Yeah.
So that's the thing, Anna. You could be anywhere on the globe at any time running just about anywhere. Isn't that the case mm-hmm. with you?
At the moment, yeah.
How do you live such a lucky life?
Well, I'm lucky. I guess I was in the right place at the right time. And, of course, I've got a wonderful sponsor who helps with that. But also I've in some ways it sacrificed the normal life for living life on the road. So it's not always easy. It sounds amazing, but not having your own bathroom or your own bed to always be in is sometimes a little bit tiring. But
I was asking Don earlier. I said, I wonder if Anna has more frequent flyer miles or more miles on her shoes.
Yeah, I think I'd probably be flying actually this year. Unfortunately, I haven't done as much running as I would have liked to do this year with the ongoing injury that I spoke to you about in January, and it plagued me a little bit. So I've still done the flying and definitely a lot of walking, but not so many running miles, which has been a little disappointing.
So give us a quick synopsis. Since January, where have you been?
Well, I was really lucky that the New Zealand, the Salomon team came out to New Zealand for a couple of weeks in March. And actually, today there's a teaser for the Salomon Running TV that goes online, and it shows quite a lot of our running in New Zealand, so you can see some of it then. And then I came out to America to meet up with the team, and the first injury came on, and that one was like a sciatica coming from my back. So I then traveled to the next race that I was supposed to be at in La Palma in Spain, the Canary Islands, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get right, so the injury kind of followed me there. And then over June, July, it came better, and I managed to race in La Reunion, which is an incredible island, so steep, and it's just bizarre because you can be at -5 degrees on the top of the island and 35 degrees at the beach, all within 2 hours driving. So that was an amazing place. And then I came back to France and did some really great fun races here with friends, and the Around Mont Blanc marathon, and then finished in July in a race called Ice Trail, which was snow up to my knees for the whole 65K and took me 11 hours to get round. So that was really fun. But Yeah. But the one was the one that my legs gave up on and said, no, we need a break. So, so I cried a lot. I had a few tantrums and it was a bit miserable to be around for a while. And while it took me, a couple of weeks to really say to myself, okay, this is stupid. You need to stop. And I panicked because for me, stopping is something I don't do and I don't know how to do. I do now. But at the time, it really panicked me and I got stressed and I didn't know what I would do, where life would go, how anything would work if I just stopped. But I stopped and I didn't run, I didn't walk, I didn't bike, I just did a little bit of swimming. And fortunately, in Annecy, I'm right beside a big lake, so I could be a lady of leisure down beside the lake. And just started the healing process, really, thinking about strengthening muscles and letting the actual injury that had been plaguing me just rest and go away. So that was 2.5 months totally off running, totally relaxing, just trying to get back into it. So it was a long process and painful. But
Anna, the one what I'm hearing here, and we spoke to Stephanie Howe too, which is a fantastic runner as well, and she had an injury and had to lay off from running, but kept with some cross training and swimming and different types of things that allowed her to come back in a very short time and have a great deal of success even without the running. And I think as runners sometimes we get so hung up on counting miles and putting in the logbook and feeling we're getting behind and getting depressed because we can't get in X miles, when in fact, apparently, you can stay in some very, very good shape just by keeping your body in shape.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've always believed in cross-training. And right from when I started doing longer running races, I continued doing as much cross-training as I could because it's not just your legs that get tired when you're running, it's your whole body, your arms, your back, your core, everything. So I think without having all of that strong as well, it's just you're creating your own weakness. And to be able to have strong lungs and strong arms and back from swimming and doing some biking, I think it's really beneficial.
Go ahead.
No, and just things like walking, I think we all underestimate as something that you can get really fit at because you can do a lot of, and your legs can get strong, and that's without the impact. So I think walking as runners is really something that we should be doing more of.
Especially if there's some incline, some hiking that's involved. You get your heart rate to the same spot that you do running and work those muscles building strength. To your point, Anna, I wanted to share with you that your story about your team putting you in the 50-mile race out here in San Francisco.
The North Face.
And you came out and hadn't run that distance, and you said to yourself, and this is the part of the story I like to tell, and you're usually not around on the trail when I'm telling it, so I'm just kind of confessing to you now that I'm quoting you a little bit, but I do give you credit out there. That there's not much of a story unless I drop your name, so I gotta mention you. And so what I say is that when you came across that task of running 50 miles, you decided you were going to get yourself in shape, and so you swam more, you biked more, you did other things besides just running 100 miles a week, which so many of us think that's is the sure, recipe.
Well, I really had I think it was 7 weeks to really prepare because I'd come out of an injury. I was just sort of had other races, had travel, and then I had 6 weeks. So I knew that I couldn't go out and run 200 kilometer weeks. And I knew that I'd never done more than 4.5 hours running in one time. So I knew I couldn't go and do a week of 6 hour runs. I would just break my legs. So I had a maximum of 4.5 hour runs, and I just did what I could do to get as fit as I could in that time without breaking my legs. So, and for me, that worked really well. And I aimed for about 5 hours of training each day. And that could have been biking or yoga or core strength or swimming or anything. And I just stuck to that 5 hour marker, and it worked well.
Anna, do you work with a coach?
I used to, but with the travels, it's really hard because, you know, half the time I don't know if I'm going to be in or where I even am. And so for a coach to give me a training program tends to be a little bit tricky with that. I do have a mentor from a coach that I had when I was doing triathlon when I was at university. So we're still in touch, and often if I have questions or I need some new ideas for some training sessions, then I can send him an email. And he's the guru with altitude. So anytime I'm going to altitude, it's really nice to be able to talk with him and say, you know, what do I need for this, and how far should I be pushing this, and what training could I do for that? So he's wonderful to still have.
Well, the reason why I ask you that is going through these injuries and finally coming to the realization that you had to rest, was mm-hmm. that something that you came to on your own, or did you have some confidants, some friends that finally said, Anna, stop, you gotta get this taken care of and rest?
Yeah, you know, I've got a bunch of really, really close friends, and they were all telling me I needed to stop and rest and go home. But as a runner, it's hard to hear that. So it took me a while for that to sink in. I think in the end it was that I had a second injury on top of the injury that I already had, and then I really realized that I couldn't continue, and with the close friends around me saying, you know, you just need to stop it. Finally, it sunk in with my team manager and team doctor. We talked about it, and well, I sat there crying and having a fit, and they tried to talk some sense into me. So eventually it sunk in, and everyone's been really supportive and there to help and giving me different ideas and options and ideas for bike training and ideas for walking tracks. So I'm very lucky that I've got a great network, yeah.
Well, first of all, the pictures that I've ever seen of you, I cannot picture you having a fit because you always have a smile on your face. So I can't see you having a fit. Secondly,
turn that picture upside down, Scott. Yeah. You'll see a frown.
Yeah. Where are you now in your fitness? Are you recovered from that those injuries?
Yeah. I'm coming back. I've had my 2.5 months off, and I started off doing just little 30-minute runs or with, you know, 1 minute running, 1 minute walking, and really, really took it super slow to get back into it. And at the moment, I'm feeling good. I'm not feeling 100%, but I'm hopefully pain-free for the next, the rest of my life. But I'm really, really careful, and I'm actually a little bit scared about getting back into training because it's hard to know. You don't know when the injury is going to flare up again. If your 31st minute is just that 1 minute too much, and so it's scary because the last thing I want to do is go back to where I was 2.5 months ago. So I'm taking it very slow. But I had a wonderful week out in Morocco, where I was doing just some big days walking, and I feel like I've gained a lot of strength from that, and hopefully now we can go forward and really start getting in the running miles.
You've got on your blog, frostyfootsteps.wordpress.com, mm-hmm. you have a story, or you've written a blog about Morocco, a place that you've always wanted to go. Why is it that you've picked anywhere on the globe Morocco as your spot?
Well, a lot of it is that a lot of my friends and family have been there and they loved it. And I've got some running friends from there who do all their training up in the Topkapi region and have said to me it's amazing. And some friends in France had done some ski mountaineering around there and showed me pictures, and I thought, wow, that's incredible. And I don't know, it's something just that it's exotic and it's different, and I hadn't been there, so it was something that I was always excited to go and see.
I've got to think that being, you know, having the option of running at different spots in different continents has got to have a feeling of exploration, of mm-hmm. just excitement. Of, you know, we run much of the same course, although it's beautiful. There's some consistency there. When you go somewhere new and different, you never know where that next marker is or where that next turn is, and exactly. And things are always opening up and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing with my running, and you know, a huge passion of mine is travel, obviously, as well as running. And without the running, I wouldn't have traveled nearly as much as I have. And the great thing with races is that sometimes you've never even thought of going to that place, or you wouldn't even see it on a map because it's so tiny, and it takes you to these most incredible mountains and places. And that's a really exciting thing, because you can then, as you run, explore even further than you could with a car or with a bike, and or walking even, you can go further. So it's a really nice way to travel and to explore. But I do have to admit that after being in Morocco for the 10 days and exploring these new and wonderful trails, coming back to Annecy, to the trails that I know and I feel at home on, was really, really nice.
There is a comfort of being back in your familiar territory. That's for sure. Yeah. When you're out and going to these new places, because I've traveled a little bit. I've gone all the way down, mm-hmm. To Southern California from Northern California. and boy, if you don't have somebody there that knows the trail, you can end up with an adventure you're not looking for. So I imagine you have to bump into somebody, or have a guide or a teammate or somebody that knows the area.
Yeah, well, we were really lucky in Morocco that Mohammed, from the winner of the Marathon des Sables, joined us. And this is his training ground. So he knew every trail, like the back of his hand, and not only the main trails, but the little secret great ones. So we were really, really lucky there. And it just took all the stress and thinking away from it. We could just go and run and walk and just look and be in bliss, really.
I imagine that, he's a legendary runner. I imagine you must have learned and picked up a pointer or two. How could you not, from being around someone like that? Do you have any takeaways from your experience with him?
He's just such an amazing guy. He's very down to earth. He's quite shy when it comes to people recognizing him, and everybody recognizes him. And he's just very, very humble to that. A lot of tips. I don't drink a lot of water when I'm running, and people are always saying to me, "Oh, you don't drink enough water." But it was very, very comforting to hear him say that he doesn't drink that much water, because when he's out there, if you gurgle away all your water, well, you just get thirsty, thirstier and thirstier. So, of course, he's got his limit of absolutely his minimum of water that he needs, but he really takes his time in drinking that. So that was really interesting to hear that he in the Sahara Desert, 6 days, he wasn't just guzzling down the water.
Tim Noakes wrote that book, Dr. Noakes, Waterlogged, and he's right on that same page we may have been led into thinking we need more than we need. However, with that said, we pass down from one runner to the next of carrying two bottles, or aid stations being X number of miles or kilometers apart. We've kind of learned what's needed to keep us going. There's been a little bit of trial and error out there. So we're all individuals and have different needs. We're not all Muhammad's or Anna's.
Exactly. Yeah. No, of course. And I know that I drink a lot. I need a lot less than other people. So it's really finding what suits you. And this is what I've said to a couple of, lots of people. They ask, what are the tricks? How do you do it? And I say, I'd love to write you a book, but you have to write your own book, because, I've learned and I've made mistakes, big, bad mistakes, and had these massive learning curves. And without those, I wouldn't be who I was, and I wouldn't be the runner I am. But, I can't say to someone, you need to drink this much water, or don't drink this much water. It's something that you have to try. And if you collapse because you haven't drunk enough, or you've drunk too much, then there's your lesson learned. Yeah.
So the collapse is what is the teaching moment, huh?
Yeah. If you don't learn from that, there's a problem.
So tell us about Morocco. Was this a training trip, or did you participate in some kind of a race over there?
No, there was actually a race out there, which I think everyone should put on their to-do list. It's called the Ultra Trail of Top Cal, I think. And there's three races, 100K, 40K and 20K, and it's absolutely beautiful, the route that they took. So that was on while I was out there, but I was very good and said I'm not going to do it because I thought that would not be in the being sensible category. So really it was just the time worked and the flights worked, and it worked with Mohammed to go out there, and in the end Lizzie Hawker was able to join us as well. For me, I was really just wanting some big days in the mountain, to kind of refresh in my mind and to get my legs out there for a long time, to do a little bit of running but focus more on just the long days.
Now,
and of course altitude. So
I envision, you know, well, I know what I do when I'm just out there having a good time running, training. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not all, you know, pushing yourself to an anaerobic state or just really mm-hmm. sweating the entire time. I mean, you take some when you get to the top of a ridge, you stop mm-hmm. and admire mm-hmm. the ridge. I mean, are you doing that when you're running with Muhammad? I mean, do you guys run to the yeah. top of a thing and then just sit there and talk about it for a while? And
yeah, for sure. We were, because we were carrying our bags as well. For me, that was a change. For Lizzie, it's just normal, but she's had an injury in her leg as well, so it was a really great opportunity for her just to come out and do some really long, slow walking. So she was just setting off at a very, very slow pace and just going and going and going all day. Mohammed and I were taking off a little bit quicker and doing, because we had the bags, I wasn't really ready to run with that. It was about 8 kgs on my back. So we were walking, and he was happy with that to walk, because he's in the starting of his training for Marathon des Sables, where he needs to carry about 8 kgs on his back as well. So we would run the bits that were easy to run and then just power hike up the hill. And of course we would stop at the tops and really enjoy it, because you get such vast and amazing views from high up there. And we were generally above 3,000 meters most of the time there, so you got some great views.
What's in that backpack that weighs 8 kilograms? Is that your bottle of wine and some cheese, or what's in there?
No, it was really just the warm clothes, the sleeping bag, and I guess I had a liter of water most days, a book, and that was it.
So this was, you weren't just going out for the day. I mean, you were going out and spending the night
We did a circuit. We went from a little town called Imlil, and we went up towards the Topkal Refuge, and we based ourselves up there for a couple of days while we did the Topkal Summit. And there's also another most amazing summit not far from where Topkal Summit is, that we did as well on another day. So we had all our stuff to stay out overnight in the little mountain huts.
Freeman, that's what we need to do.
What, bring sleeping bags to on our runs?
Yes, we need. Don and I run a lot together, and that's what mm-hmm. we need to do. We need to go out and spend like a 4 days and go out with our backpacks and our sleeping bags and just be out there.
All right,
don't come home.
I'm game.
Yeah, you should.
You inspired us, Anna.
Good. It's really, really fun. I don't know what the regions are like there with mountain huts that you can stay at, but gosh, it's so much fun. You get some friends and you go, and you don't need to do massive days, but you can go and enjoy the evening as long as you've got some warm clothes and some warm food and hot water. Then it's awesome.
Well, we were speaking of summits there, and we spied your name and an image of you.
A cameo
in Anton Karpichka's movie by Joel Wolpert in the High Country. Yeah. Tell us about that experience. What brought you into that film, and fill in some details if you can. Did you know you were in it?
Well, I haven't actually seen it, to be honest.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, you have to see it, Anna. Yeah. It's great.
But I was there during a lot of the filming, so I can imagine how great it is. Yeah, they're both very, very intriguing people. this was last year, I guess, when I was out there. And I think it was about 2 months that I was there, and this was the start of the horrid injury. Fortunately, Tony was injured as well, so we got to be injured together. Well, you wouldn't know he was injured because he was still flying up the mountains, but we just did a lot of the 14,000-meter mountains all around Leadville. Mm-hmm. And we were really just doing the power hikes up and then sort of jogging back down, and it was really amazing. I've never been that high so often up in those mountains, and I've never experienced such heat at such height as well. I was always amazed at how hot it was up there. I also learned some lessons about the mountains. I guess I took it for granted a little bit, and one day I was up there while he was doing the recce for the Nolans course that he's trying to do, and I saw a storm brewing on the other side of the valley, but I thought, oh no, it will never get to me. And within seconds it was on top of me, and lightning and thunder and shooting through my body and my hair standing on end. And yeah, it was a horrible experience really. So I learned that being up in those mountains in the afternoon in summer is not a great idea. We spent some time in Boulder as well doing some filming on the Flatirons. It's amazing to see both of those guys just scrambling up there while I was hanging on for dear life. So it's a different life, I guess, that they're living.
You know, we should have asked Tony about this. You know, he has one of his undergraduate degrees is in geology, and I'm sure that he has really researched that whole geological phenomenon of the Flatirons pushing up out of the earth the way it is there in Boulder. Yeah. Do you guys sit down and, I mean, did he say, Anna, let me sit down and tell you about the Flatirons?
No, he didn't actually, but I'm sure you're right that he probably does know. He's very intelligent. He does a lot of reading and research about where he's going and what he's doing, and he doesn't ever leave a stone unturned on something like the Nolans course record that he's going for. That, you know, he knows every single rock that's totally off track on that course, and on the Flatirons he knows it. You know, he walks up there, he could go up there blind and go up the same way every single time. So you feel very confident that he knows exactly what he's doing and where he's doing it, and I'm sure he knows every historical detail about it as well.
You know, Anna, some people have an internal compass. You know, you could drop them in the middle of the night upside down and they can find their way out. And I'm the exact opposite. I need a trail with some rails along the just to hold on to get down the way.
He has a tough time with just the ribbons every 100 yards.
Yeah. In fact, I had to follow directions back here. So, but maybe if I understood geography and understood the lay of the land a little bit better, I maybe I would run with a different perspective. But that's some people have that.
Yeah, no, I'm in your category. I don't really have a compass either. Usually, like sometimes I don't even know where I've gone, and I'll turn around to go back to the house, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure if I came this way. I've literally not turned off the track, but it looks totally different. So
well, I'm in good company then. I feel, you know, some people are born with some, you know, maybe some people can sing, some people can draw, some people have compasses. I don't have any three of those. I got to think of another one. Hey, Anna, looking around on your blog and just checking things out, trying to catch up from January, I saw an entry about some trail gear or something inspired by Anna Frost. What's coming up ahead? Can you give us any? Do you know anything about this?
I do.
Okay. I would hope so.
Anybody knows, she would.
I was just springing it on her.
It's been an amazing project. When, again, during was given an opportunity just to spend some time in Salomon, getting creative. It was just go on there and share some ideas because I've had so much travel and experience and I've seen so many cultures and colours and patterns and designs that I really just wanted to share that with Salomon. So I spent 2 weeks in the lab drawing and collecting some ideas and I basically drew a range of a dream, and they loved it, and so they selected a limited edition, and we continued to develop it, and the story grew and the colors grew and the technology grew, and before I knew it, I had a little range, and it looks really, really nice. It's female specific. It's looks really, really feminine, but also it maintains a really scientific fabric. So we've not compromised on fabric for fashion. And I've just sold that to the sellers. We did a big meeting, and the final product looks really nice. It's a New Zealand limited edition, so we've used materials from New Zealand. We've used patterns and colours that are inspired by me from home, and all the lines of the design is inspired by what I feel it really means home to me. The sellers will take that into, I think it's about 300 shops throughout Europe and USA, and that will be in the shops, I think, in July next year.
Okay, so let's get some details. Now, you're talking to two guys about female clothes, so we may not have very good questions. And remember that we only know our primary colors, and patterns are like squares and circles. Okay, so that's really where we come from. But are you talking about shorts or skorts or what kind of stuff?
I'm not going to tell you all of that, but it's just really pretty girl stuff.
All right. So necklaces and scarves, that kind of stuff, but functional.
No, just there's a small range. It's from casual and to racing, and a bit of a mixture and a bit of difference, but still very feminine. So I think that you'll be able to start seeing it online or with. We do a photo shoot in December, so that one you'll just have to wait for.
Well, we will wait, and we're available for the photo shoot. Scott's got some pretty good legs over there. If you're looking for a model,
good. If you can meet me in New Zealand in December, that's perfect.
Okay, you know, I would assume just by doing a little research here, it sounds like you like that design and. Mm. Drawing. Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about this back in January when we talked to you, but you have another little side project called Frosty's Jewels, which is frostyjewels.com. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've always had lots of little side projects, and there's so many lives I'd like to live. I need to have like 16 different lives to fulfill all the dreams that I have, but one of them is to make jewelry. And again, with all my travels, I go to so many beautiful places that have wonderful beads and shells and all sorts of beautiful things that, I love to put together. So, and making the jewelry and the other nice thing about making jewelry like that is that it's a time where you can just sit down and be totally mindful of the jewelry without thinking of anything else. So your body rests and your mind rests, and it's been a really nice experience. I've just been doing some little limited editions of my travels. So I did one from La Palma and one from La Reunion. I've got some beautiful beads from my trip in Morocco, and I head to Nepal next week. So I'm going to have some wonderful beads from there. So December, I hope to have another two little ranges there as well. And it's not about making money. It's not about making it a huge business, but it's just a nice hobby that I love doing and that I can then share those inspirations with other people as well.
Well, Frosty, I'm going to give you a little bit of advice here.
Oh, good. He gives me plenty of advice, Frost. I'm glad he's given you some.
I'm not a professional runner, but I am in sales and marketing, and I'm just looking at your website at frostysjewels.com, and I want to teach you a little bit about supply and demand. I'm looking at this at this website, and everything is out of stock, the first thing that comes to my mind, you're not charging enough for this stuff. You should never be out of stock.
It's not about money, Scott. She's sharing her passion and her love. Do you listen to the podcast?
I mean, I was really surprised and taken back, and it was a really nice feeling that, you know, people really loved this stuff, because art is hard, you know. It's such a personal perspective towards it, and it's a personal touch, and you never know what people are going not like. And I made what I felt was beautiful, and I was absolutely amazed at how willing people were and how much people loved it and bought it so quickly. And of course, I couldn't just pop back to La Palma and get some more beads, or pop back to La Reunion to get some more shells. And so it was really, the idea of the rangers was that they're limited, because obviously it's from my travels and there's only so much I can bring back with me. And I was amazed at how the response of people was really fantastic. So it's been exciting. It's been a wonderful little journey and project, and I'll definitely continue it. But again, it's not going to be massive stocks of things.
Well, as Scott always does, he's taking notes, and he has written down the website, so he'll link it to this podcast if you're interested in looking at some of the art. And Christmas is coming up, so you've got a push coming on. It's time to start making some more jewelry over there.
Well, I'm looking at it, and again, Don reminded you that we are guys, but I'm looking at this stuff.
I had to remind her.
This is pretty beautiful stuff.
Yeah. Well, this is the great thing. I'm so lucky that I go to these beautiful places that have just simple things like the ancient glass on the beach. And for them, it's normal because it's everywhere. But for me, that's not normal. So it's wonderful to be able to share that with people. And I'm just lucky that I come across these beautiful things that I can recreate.
You ready for Scott? Scott and I are Rochambeauing here for the next question, and mm-hmm. I hit paper. He had rock. So here's the question.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how we do it over here. So you've run everywhere, and over here in America, at least, trail running has increased in popularity. Mm-hmm. Do you see the same the swing up in other places, or are we just catching up, or who's leading, or what's going on? Sure.
Everyone's going crazy about it, for sure.
Awesome.
There's it's really, really nice to see, and the wonderful thing is that it's not just guys. There's women loving it as well. And when I first came to the San Fran 50 miler, the total race entry was 51% women, and that amazed me, and I was so happy to see that, because it's just wonderful that the women feel that they can get out there and do this as well. And it's fantastic, the growth in all sorts, from the vertical kilometer, which is could be at any time and any place at any day. And it's so accessible for so many people. Or there's the 5K trails, and then there's the ultras. And it's really nice that anybody can do it, and there's so many opportunities for people to do it all over the world. And everywhere I go, it's really, really growing, and it's fantastic to see. And not only that, but the sponsors seem to be getting more involved. Of course, the Salon team has always been there, but you see more and more teams with Innovate coming on and New Balance coming on and North Face, and everyone seems to be really team-orientated and saying, okay, well, if we're going to travel to these races, then why not take a bunch of us and make a really good go of it? And I think that's it's a really fun part of it, because there's nothing like sharing a race with your teammates. So,
that's a question that I have, as an elite runner like you are, do you find that most of your training is done with guys and not as much with women? Mm-hmm. Or do you find that there's enough women that you can get out there and get a good workout with some other ladies?
No, actually, a lot of the time I train on my own because, one, I don't work, so I don't have to stick to work hours, so I can go when I'm ready. But also because I travel so much that often I don't really know who's around, or, I'm just going and exploring the mountains anyway. But when I do train, it's often with guys for sure, with the team. Obviously when I'm around Emily, we train together as well, and that's fantastic. But when I'm home, I've got a really solid group of people in New Zealand that I go training with, and there's a couple of women, but mainly men there as well. Yeah.
I've noticed as over the last decade or so of watching the trail population change In the beginning, there were very few ladies out there that we would share the trail with, and now there are just groups of them. Yeah, the sport has definitely opened up to, you know, multi-gender out here. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And this is part of the range that I've been developing, because there are so many women out there, and let's be honest, we want to look good when we're out there, and I can see, you know, the women look great, but so often the brands just make the guys' clothes but in pink. And we don't need guys' clothes that are in pink. We need women's specific clothing and shapes and colors and fit. And so this is part of my project, to design something for women, because we're women, and something comfortable and that works, not just grabbing the guy's shorts and making it into a skirt and changing the color to pink. So, yeah, it's been a really great project, and hopefully the women love it because it's for them only, you know.
Scott Warr, you did not need to teach Anna one thing about marketing.
No.
She just showed you that she has a few aces in her hand. That's a nice way to work that in, and I think absolutely appropriate.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, so we've seen, you talked a little bit about cross training, and I saw an image of you that made me happy, because I've just gotten into this very same thing, and that is stand-up paddleboarding.
Oh, it's so good.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
What do you love so much about it? And then I'll tell you what I love about it.
Okay. Well, I think it's just different. You know, I've always swum in the water or been around the water, but to be on it like that, not getting smashed by waves crashing over your head or pounding you off your surfboard, or you know, it's peaceful, it's nice, and you can still get such a nice core workout for the body, but it's also just so relaxing to go out there and really enjoy. You can take a little picnic with you if you want, or just go on to the middle of the lake and lie down on the board and relax. And yeah, I find it a extremely peaceful time. Of course, I don't do stand-up paddleboard sessions, which I see a lot of people out there doing, and that's a different story again. But yeah, it's fantastic. What do you like about it?
Well, hang on real quick. I want you to clarify something. When you're doing stand-up paddleboarding, are you doing it on a lake? Are you doing it in the ocean?
I've done both, but I haven't done it in waves. I've done it on a lake and in the ocean, but the ocean was flat.
Okay.
So I haven't done the big waves or the rapids in the river.
Well, okay. So I'll go on some of the things that some takeaways and things I love about it. The board I'm using is made by, they didn't send us one, but I just love the name because it really speaks to what we're doing out there, and it's called Stand on Liquid. That's the name of the board.
Yeah.
And it does feel like you're literally standing on water when you're out there. And then to the core part, everything that you're making yourself go forward has to come through the paddle and your feet, and your body is working hard to make sure that you're able to transmit that energy and power. So it's great core stuff and stabilization training for the back and for your knees and for your hips and ankles. And it's a different workout because you really are using a lot of upper body, where when we're running, we're using a lot of lower body. So it feels good to work the other half and get out there.
Yeah. And the thing is that if someone says to you, you need to do a core strength session and it has to be an hour, and you're thinking lying inside a gym or inside doing crunchies and crunchies and crunchies and press ups, or they say you can go out on your stand up paddleboard and go out on the lake and be surrounded by mountains for an hour. Well, I think the choice is easy there, isn't it?
So with your trail.
Wait, I'm not done with stand up paddleboard, Scott.
I'm still there.
Okay, good.
I wasn't changing subject. I was going to say with your travel schedule. It's not like you can throw your paddleboard on your shoulder or throw it in a carry-on.
No. Well, this is the nice thing about Annecy in France. You'll have to Google it and have a look at a map on where we are. But it's got a big, big lake in the middle, and it's beautiful. And you're surrounded by mountains around the whole lake. So all along the shore, you can hire paddle boats and jet boats for jet skiing and stand up paddleboards. So that's really nice that I can just go down and rent it whenever I want, and you know, it's not extortionate prices. But for sure, it's not a simple sport to just take, and that's why running is so easy, because it's literally one pair of shoes, and well, for the females, an essential is the bra. And you're off. So that's why running is so easy and so great to travel with.
You spoke about the paddleboard and the jet ski. You know, I think that's kind of like the cyclist and the runner. You know,
exactly.
As we're running out there and a cyclist comes by, sometimes they don't always share the space, yeah. And you know, we kind of give them a wave a fist at them if they're not watching. But the same thing with that jet ski. In the beginning, those jet skis were putting me down, and I think they were doing that on purpose, making those waves. It didn't take much of a wave to put me in the water. So I think
giving you an extra challenge.
Yeah. You talked about lying. I'm still on paddleboard, Scott.
I know. I'm paying attention.
You talked about if you have a few minutes to just to lay down or lie down on that board and just take it all in. And I did that, you know, a few weeks back, and it was just a warm day, and I was at the level of the water, and it was calm, and I just the whole world stopped for a moment. And we don't get enough of that, just stopping and resting and just contemplating.
Yeah, no, that's something that I've not done and I'm not good at, and I've had to learn because we live in a lifestyle that it's always go, and there's no reason why we need to stop. You know, we've got everything right at our fingertips. We can order this, that, and the other on the internet. We can jump on a cheap flight and go to another country within a couple of hours. You know, we've supported by a sponsor, so we can just keep racing and keep racing and keep going. There's no excuses for us to stop, except that we have to stop, and if we don't stop, then we run into a brick wall and we crash. And that's exactly what I did, and I, you know, you have to learn from that. But at the same time, if you can learn to stop and just take a break and really take a break, it's not just physically but mentally, more importantly, then it's such a huge thing to be able to learn, and I think it's a huge step in being stronger and mentally. And like I said to you before, I panicked when I stopped. I had no idea what to do. I didn't know what to think. It was just a horrible feeling. But once I realized that it was okay, that I was safe, and that it was allowed and it was normal to stop and breathe and just take time to not do anything, I feel that I've definitely gained strength mentally with that. So to be able to go out on a paddleboard or even stop at the top of a mountain and during a run, just to take some time not to think or just to look and just to feel and to listen and to breathe, I think is a huge benefit that we all take for granted that we can do, but we don't.
You know, and some people have figured that out. They work on meditation and do different things just to slow down and stop. And I personally need to do some more of that too. I think that's we probably all get caught up in the day to day, and schedules are full, and we probably get a lot more done by just taking a few moments and
resting. You don't have to have like a 2-week retreat where you don't speak for 2 weeks, but. And only eat rice or whatever. You know, you don't need to do that. It could be just 5 minutes a day where you just lie down and just breathe, or you just stretch and breathe, or you sit on the top of a mountain during your run just for 5 minutes and look. It doesn't take much, but I think you gain a lot from that.
I worked on a wellness program with a company, and we had different activities that you could get points for, or some bingo type stuff where you had to do an activity and mark off a square. And one of those was sitting at your desk and just taking 5 minutes and just being silent and just resting, not falling asleep at your desk, but just you know, kind of meditating and either listening to, there was a YouTube clip that they could go into and listen to some music or look at an image and just take a moment and just let it go.
You know, that's really hard to do nowadays with as electronically dependent we are. You know, I see it all the time, like in line at a grocery store or even looking around as people at a stoplight. They can't just sit there. They have to be playing with their phone or something. Yeah. So I think I think it's healthy to do that.
I'm going to insert a 5 minute silence here on the clip.
You'll add a 5 minute silence in on here.
Just a 5 minute, just blank. So if it just goes blank for a second, you're supposed to just relax. And now we're back.
And
what do you enjoy most, running or training or racing? What brings you the most pleasure?
Oh, well, they're both so different. I love racing because I'm really competitive. I love that feeling of pushing to your max and feeling what you can do. But it's only, you know, such a small percent of our training. And it's the running that is the passion. And because if you weren't really, really passionate, if you weren't really, really in love with your running, then you couldn't race. You couldn't push through that pain and you couldn't push those barriers. So the thing that I love the most is being out there and running, and whether it's a training session or just going out for a long walk or for a bike or being out in the mountains, that's the thing that I love the most. Sometimes it's hard if you're a little bit stiff or tired, but as soon as you get out there, even if it's raining, then you breathe in that fresh air, and it's just, that's the thing that I really, really love. So as much as racing is awesome, it's a great feeling, the actual running, just the training is the passion.
You know, when you just mentioned when you're racing, you have to push through the pain and sometimes you have to, you know, talk to that voice in your head that's talking negative thoughts to you. How do you do that? And I'm going to preface this because when we were talking to Tony Krupicka, he actually had a surprising answer that he does not like to disassociate. He doesn't like to
he doesn't like to mask the pain,
yeah,
or not listen to that voice. He wants to know what it's like to run 100 miles and be completely present and aware of the pain that he's experiencing.
You paraphrased very well, Don. Well,
I was helping you out, pal.
Yeah. So where do you stand on that? How do you disassociate, or do you?
No, I don't think I go away from the pain, because again, you have to be there. You have to work through it. You have to say, okay, well, this hurts, but of course it hurts. I've run 40 miles so far and I've got another 10 and I'm pushing really hard. So you just have to try and accept that pain and say, okay, well, it's pain. I mean, unless you've broken your ankle or your shin is snapped in half, like, okay, that's different sort of pain, and then you should probably stop. But if it's just, you know, you've pushed hard and your body is tired and it's fatiguing, you know it is. You knew it was going to be like that. So there's no point denying it or trying to hide it. You just need to accept it and say, okay, well, it hurts, so get on with it and let's get this over and done with. And I think for me, that's always in my mind, that when there's a hill or when there's that last 10 mile to go and it hurts, I say to myself, well, the slower I go, the longer the pain is going to last. So let's get moving and get to the finish. So yeah, I think people are different again. You know, some people like to think about the views or whatever is surrounding them, but and some people just like to go into it and say, okay, well, it hurts. What hurts? How can we deal with it? And let's get moving.
So do you, when you're dealing with that part of the race, when you're that in that position in the race, are you analytical about it, saying, okay, this is what's wrong, and then try to talk through what was the cause or how am I going to get out of this? How do I, you know, what do I need to do? What are the steps to get beyond this?
Yes.
Or do you just make peace with it and say, this is painful, let's get down the road, let's go?
Yeah, I mean, usually that's what I do. I usually just say, okay, well, it hurts, but of course it hurts. So let's hurry up and get it over and done with. Sometimes just a slight change in technique can help take pressure off something. You know, if you've got really sore calf muscles, then just getting off your toes for a bit and slightly changing your technique, even if it's just for a minute or two, can sometimes just, you know, alleviate that pain. Or if you're powering up a really steep hill, maybe just going to power walking rather than doing a little slow run. And sometimes just a little change in what you're doing can help get rid of some pain for a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, that helps. And also maybe you're really tired or you're bonking and your legs are fatigued and maybe you just need some sugar to eat. So, and plus it takes away the thought of the pain for a little bit if you're eating or drinking. So Again, it's kind of up to writing your own chapter and in your book of how to deal with your own pain. And it's always going to be different as well. Some races you may not feel it as much, and some it may be horrific. So you have to have, I guess, lots of different strategies on how to deal with that, and just knowing before that, yeah, this could really hurt.
Do you go into or go to... I don't know how to phrase this question. In your training, do you subscribe to going into that bad place where you put yourself where things are hurting, or you've pushed yourself to a really uncomfortable place? Do you believe in doing that in training or just in racing?
Yeah, for sure. In training, I do that. If I'm doing, you know, a hill rep session, one of my favorites is 8 minutes by three uphill, and then just a jog back down, and that's painful. That's really, really painful, but so rewarding as well, because you've pushed yourself so hard and you usually get some good views on the way up and down, and it's not as long as maybe you would be in pain for during a race, but you still get that feeling of effort and of energy zapping and of pain. And I think that's important to do, because otherwise if it's such a surprise to you in the race because you haven't done it any other times, then it's a bit of a shock. Whereas if you know what it can feel like already in your training, then on race day, you're like, okay, well, this is going to hurt and I know what hurt feels like. So you're prepared for it.
In a recent not too long ago race, I was having all of those problems that you're talking about. You know, as we all have, you know, pile them all on, and then there was a rattlesnake that was adjacent to the trail, and it was in a spot that it was coiled up, or you know, coming doing its thing and
was
shaking
it rattling?
Its tail. It was rattling the whole thing, and the couple of guys that I was running with. All of a sudden, we had legs that you would not believe. We could dance, we could hop, we could leap, you know. So some of these things are so mental, and our bodies are they're not shutting down. You know, we're shutting ourselves down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of mental power that we've got that we forget about, and often it's just a reminder to yourself. Okay, well, I've done the training, I've got the legs. It's still a wee way to go and it hurts already, but you can do it. And like I was saying, apart from, you know, really snapping something, then you really can. You just have to sometimes go to the bottom of where you've gone and hit rock bottom and say, okay, well, I've hit rock bottom, so now let's get going.
So I have a question for you. That's your line, Scott. Yeah. I have a question for you. If you were to design Frosty's Race, the perfect course that was designed for you, you name the length, how much vertical, what would the profile look like? What would be the perfect race for you?
That's really hard. I think mine would have to be a series. Is that hitting?
Yeah, you can have. This is your race. You can do anything you want.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it would be along the lines of the Sky Running when they do a vertical K. And then maybe a 10K uphill, a 40K, and let's say an 80K. So over a weekend, having all of those races, where there was sections of time trials to the first peak or the first 5K. And it's all a points race. So even if you win one race, you might not necessarily win the whole weekend of racing. So you have to do all races and have to perform consistently across them to get your final place. I think that would be really fun, and then you get an all-round runner rather than just a specialist, which I think would be really fun.
Well, that sounds like that might happen somewhere. If somebody's listening, that we can create something like that.
Yeah, that would be great.
All right. Now, we've got some questions for you, and it's called gear priority. All right, so I'm gonna rattle off a couple of choices, and you're gonna give us Anna's preference here. Is that all right?
Okay. Yeah.
Visor or hat?
Sorry.
Oh, which would you what do you
either
prefer? What? Yeah, I'm still here. You can't delay like that if you don't know the answer. You can't come up. You can't create some kind of technical difficulty. Are you still there? We have lost her. Well, there's a certain period of time.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Have we got you, Anna?
I'm back.
Perfect. Okay, so this is called Gear Priority. We've never done it before, but we're going to kind of play it off like we've done it lots of times.
Doesn't sound like we're very good at it.
We may not ever do it. So Gear Priority. So I'm going to ask you if you'd prefer a gear, a visor or a hat, and then you'd answer with, well, I'd never wear a hat. I'm always a visor. What's your choice?
Okay.
So are we ready?
Yeah.
Visor or hat?
Visor.
Well, that's the end of it. Good.
No, thank you. No, we have more than one.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't write any more than one down, Scott. I wasn't sure how it was going to go. I just wanted to start easy. Okay. Bottles or hydration pack?
Oh, you mean handheld bottles?
Right.
Neither. Is there an option?
She doesn't drink.
I know. Well, you must really? Carry something.
She bends over when she passes a stream and laps up some cool water.
Wow.
Okay, no, I will go a pack if I have to take a pack. I really don't like the handheld things because I like my hands to use to grab flowers.
Oh, that's the best answer. I love it.
All right. Real food or trail engineered food? You know, like your chomps and different stuff.
I don't mind like energy bars as long as they're not full of chemicals. So natural trail bars. Is that okay? I'm in the middle there. But real food squashed down into a bar. How's that?
Perfect. how about as far as shoes go, more of a minimalist shoe or a shoe with some protection and some cushion?
I go with protection and cushion.
All right. What temperature in Fahrenheit or Celsius, clarify, what temperature is it mandatory for you to put on a pair of gloves for a run? Do you have that down? Do you have that in your head?
I will probably go with 10 degrees Celsius. Then the gloves would definitely be on.
I don't know what that translates to, Scott, but it's,
I have no idea.
I don't either. So just
32 is 32 degrees Fahrenheit is 0 degrees Celsius, so it's got to be 45.
All right. Okay. Somebody's checking that.
I'm guessing.
So if there's ice on the ground, you're definitely wearing some gloves, correct?
Oh, yeah. All definitely. Right. Okay. Way before the ice.
Right, because 0 is freezing. That I remember from my high school chemistry or physics or whatever I took. Full tights, at what temperature? Are they? When do you slide on a full pair of tights?
Well, it would be the same or if it's raining.
Got it. Music, does it have a place on the trail for you, a headset?
Never.
Ah.
Never. You know? No, I can't. I get too distracted and I stop and I start singing the music. I stop running.
You start dancing?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's next for Anna Frost?
Wait. I want to back up. I don't care about the visor and the hat. I think I would like to know what's on Anna's playlist. When she's not running, because she doesn't listen to it when she's running.
Okay.
When you're not running, when you're laying back on your paddleboard, what are you listening to? What kind of music do you like?
Well, usually on the paddleboard, it's the jet boats going by and the birds tweeting above. But I really like a mixture of music. There's probably my favorite sort of music is our New Zealand dub music. It's kind of a mixture of reggae and jazz. It's kind of a funky type of music.
Name an artist. Who's your favorite artist of New Zealand dub music?
They're called Fat Freddy's Drop.
Okay. Fat Freddy's Drop.
We will close this podcast with a Fat Freddy's Excellent. Drop. Which song should we select?
Any of them. They're all wonderful.
Okay. We will do that.
Yeah.
We'll visit Great. iTunes or some download mechanism, and we'll have that at the end of this podcast.
That's perfect.
Now you can ask your question.
Okay. Visor or hat?
No. Right. We did that already,
okay.
Don.
Sorry.
You can ask more again.
So what's next for Anna? What's ahead? What's happening for you?
Well, yeah. She's going to the Himalaya, right?
Yeah, at the moment I'm packing my bags to go to Nepal, I'm trying to get it as light as I can, but at the moment it's super heavy, so I'm trying to get rid of some weight. I'm doing the Everest Sky Race, which is 12 stages, about 330K across the Himalayas, with 18,000 meters of altitude gain and loss, and 5 passes over 5,000 meters, and the highest we go to is 5,700 meters. We have to carry everything, so everything we need for those 12 days, our sleeping bags, our energy, our clothes, and camping stove, because we have a couple of nights where we have to cook, so some freeze-dried food.
You have to carry your food for 12 days?
No, just for one full day.
Oh, okay.
The only rest of the time, the Sherpas will cook us up some little rice dishes, I guess. So that one's the first one that I'm doing, and then I get back to Kathmandu for a couple of days of rest, and then I go and do the Manaslu Trail Race, which is in the Annapurna region. So the Everest Sky Race goes from the Annapurna region and crosses the Himalayas to Everest Base Camp. And then the other one is near the Annapurna region, but in the Manaslu. And that's 7 days stage race and about 200 kilometers with some good ascent and gain as well. But that one we don't have to carry all of our stuff, just a smaller bag of food and water. So, yeah, it's going to be 2 months of big, long, high days in the mountains with small groups and not big races. I think there's 50 in one and 30 in the other. But just a really nice experience to discover new places, new routes, new people, in a place that I know I absolutely love. So that's an exciting 2 months coming up.
I'm unfamiliar with where they are in their weather patterns. Is it cold?
It's summer for them now.
Okay.
But still it can snow. When you're up at 5,000 meters. So the days are pretty good, but the nights are still really, really cold.
Will we be able to follow some of this adventure on Frosty's Footsteps? Will you have that on
Hopefully.
Your blog?
I'll do my best to get to the internet where I can. I think they're going to be doing updates when they can on their website, which I'll put a link to on my blog as well. But I'm guessing it's going to be sort of very infrequent as we go through the mountains, because we're not really going back to civilization until mid-November. So at that point, I'll be able to give you all my details.
Are you going with some other Solomon team members?
No. This is really just an exploration. I was initially just planning to go there to spend some time in the mountains. Then I got talking to one race organizer, and he mentioned to another race organizer that I'd be there. So they've both been fantastic and very, very welcoming to their races. I decided that instead of just being there on my own in the mountains, which would have been wonderful still, I get to go and enjoy the company of other people as well. So that will be really, really nice.
How does that work with Solomon? I mean, they're your main sponsor. Do they, mm-hmm. I mean, do you have to say, here's what I want to do this year for the next 6 months, and they approve or disapprove, or they just basically let you do whatever you want to do?
No, for sure. We have an international race calendar every year that between the whole team we try and cover. So we don't try and send everybody to one race. We kind of mix it up and we choose which ones we do or don't want to do. And sometimes we might go to one just to fill in the space. It's more convenient for us. And then on top of that, we can say, this is what I want. This is a project I'd like to do. This is where I want to go. And if it fits, then that's fantastic. And they'll support us with that.
Well, you know, Solomon is a great, great company, and they have some amazing mm-hmm. gear. You know, we've had the chance to wear some and on our feet and on our backs, and they're very functional, and it's awesome that they're out there in the community, in the trail community, doing what they're doing.
And supporting, you. I mean, that sounds like a great company to be associated with. Congratulations.
Oh, it's really great. Yeah, thank you. I mean, they're really great. I definitely wouldn't be here without them and all the team as well, because you know, it gets sometimes gets lonely and it gets hard to do on your own. So having a wonderful team, you know, and they're my family. Without them, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, thanks for joining us, Anna. We'd like to catch up to you again once you settle back in and get off of these next adventures and find out what's happening.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Maybe in another 6 months.
a standing date. Put it in the calendar and doggone it, let Solomon know you're busy on that day because we've got a podcast to do, all right?
Absolutely. It sounds perfect.
Well, go out and have a great run today, Anna. I hope you have a nice day along the lake there. Maybe get on your paddleboard and do some stand-up paddleboarding.
Trail Runner Nation members, go out to trailrunnernation.com. That's our website. We're on Facebook and we're on Twitter at We Are Nation.
Now go out and run.
Mas.
Winner, wander, see right through you, flying, high in, pretty.